KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, more cuts are looming for most of the commercial halibut fleet, and we meet a Homer man who is inducted into the Seafood Hall of Fame. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960. Or online at alaskaboat.com.
After years of cuts, Southeast Alaska halibut fishermen might see a small increase in their catch next year, but the total quota could be down again coast-wide in 2012 and beyond. During a meeting Wednesday in Seattle, the International Pacific Halibut Commission staff unveiled recommendations for an overall drop of 19% next year. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein reports.
In my 15 years at the commission, and I've dealt progressively with bycatch and climate and oceanography, harvest policy and assessment, I can easily say that this is by far the most difficult year to date.
IPHC staff scientist Dr. Stephen Hare began with some sobering thoughts as he went over this year's halibut stock assessment with the commissioners from the U.S. and Canada. Hare pointed to a decade-long decline in the exploitable biomass of halibut. He said the IPHC staff continued to deal with a number of issues this year, including bycatch, the effects of migration, the declining size of the fish, and all facets of halibut management. One key problem has been smaller fish. While there are a lot of individual halibut out there, they aren't growing as big, according to Hare.
We are fishing now, if you will, in a number of very small year classes relative to what was there before. So there are fewer recruits coming in. The ones that are coming in are small.
Overall, the staff recommended another drop in the total harvest this year from 41 million pounds to 33 million coastwide. That includes another cut to the biggest segment of the halibut catch, the Central Gulf Area 3A, which would have a limit of about 12 million pounds, which is down another 17% on top of several previous years of cuts. But there's potentially bigger cuts on the horizon. A lot of the staff's detailed presentation dealt with an ongoing concern about uncertainties in the survey and stock assessment process, as well as a so-called retrospective analysis looking at past overestimates of halibut abundance. Along with their catch recommendations for 2012, the staff included an alternate set of limits showing much larger cuts of 50% or more to the quotas in all areas. According to IPHC Director Bruce Lehman, staff was not unanimous that the commission should go in that direction, but they were highlighting a serious problem.
I think it's worthwhile pointing out to you the reality that in using our assessment models the way we are consistently overestimating biomass.
Area 2C, which is Southeast Alaska, and the Pacific Northwest Area 2A are the only areas that may see an increase under the staff recommendations for 2012. The Northwest quota would go up about 9%. 2C, Southeast, would increase about 13%, or 300,000 pounds. 2C commercial fishermen have weathered the biggest cuts to their individual catches, a loss of nearly 80% over the last 6 years. The Halibut Commission will not decide on the 2012 recommendations until their annual meeting January 24th in Anchorage. I'm Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at www.msea.org or 907-747-3287. And by the Pebble Partnership, listening before we act. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
Two Petersburg men are safe after escaping from a capsized fishing boat in Petersburg's South Harbor Sunday afternoon. The 40-foot wooden troller Dawn rolled over in a big outgoing tide near the end of the harbor's southernmost moorage float. Owner Kenny Olson had pulled out of his stall and was making the turn to leave the harbor when the vessel went over to starboard and flooded. Olson said he was able to climb out the wheelhouse window and make it off the vessel to the dock. Mike Chewy, Mika, was out on deck and had to jump in and swim for safety in the frigid water. He said it took every bit of strength he had to pull himself out onto another vessel moored nearby. The two men were down at the harbor Monday morning where another vessel owner helped them salvage gear. Olson said he had no insurance on the boat. Harbor Master Glo Woolen said the harbor staff, the salvage vessel RB, and a local diver were able to right the Dawn and move it into a vacant stall where it remained Monday morning. The vessel was still mostly underwater, but upright with its trolling poles and other rigging exposed. An oil-absorbent boom was in place at the end of the stall, and a light sheen of oil was visible on the surface. The 2011 salmon season in Alaska is shaping up to be a good year. At least that's the message of a leading fishery economist who provided an update on the season at the recent Pacific Marine Expo in Seattle. KDLG's Mike Mason attended the expo and brought back this story.
The exact value of the 2011 Alaska salmon harvest won't be known until the spring, but as it currently stands, it's the third most valuable harvest since 1975 and is expected to eventually reach number two on the list. The update on the season was given by economist Chris McDowell with the consulting firm The McDowell Group based in Juneau. He says 2011 was a fantastic year.
One of the interesting aspects about this year is the strong earnings. You know, we had a good but not great pink salmon harvest. We had 115 million pinks. We've caught 160 million pinks before, so pink salmon markets are really strong right now. So a lot of that $600 million was driven by pink and chum earnings.
The preseason forecast anticipated a commercial salmon harvest in Alaska of 203 million fish, while the actual harvest this year came in at 176 million fish. Being an economist, McDowell spent quite a bit of time outlining the value of the salmon harvest and the market conditions affecting that value.
When you're dealing with pinks, you got to take it in two-year chunks to account for the odd-even abundance cycle. So I went back and I looked at 6 years from 04 to 09 and then compared that to the last 2 years. And most of the value growth that we've seen has been in the pink and chum. So in growing up to that $600 million range, the traditional high-value species, cohos, kings, sockeyes, that overall value increased by 13%, and pinks and chums went up 83%.
Fish and Game reports that the pink salmon harvest set an all-time record this year at over $170 million. $92 million of that pink salmon value came from the pink harvest in southeast Alaska. The total commercial salmon harvest out of Alaska is estimated to be about 13% of the total world supply, and McDowell says as farm salmon production continues to rebound, the Alaska total could drop down to 10 to 11%. McDowell says Alaska does a pretty good job of differentiating its salmon within the larger commodity supply.
There's the wild, sustainable, natural messaging. We really are different. But to some extent, to a large extent, our values are also shaped by commodity performance of salmon. And when we get down around that 10 or 12% range in total salmon supply, we're kind of, to a large extent, along for the ride in commodity values.
McDowell's also a commercial fisherman. He runs a drift net vessel each summer in Bristol Bay. McDowell annually gives an overview of the commercial fishing season in Alaska during Pacific Marine Expo, held each November in Seattle. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
I love Alaskan salmon, wild Alaskan salmon, caught by Alaskan fishermen. I love cod and shellfish, they sure make a swell dish. I think that halibut is grand. I don't want T-bone steak, carved from a steer in Texas, but give me fish. And I don't give a damn if I do pay taxes. I love Alaskan salmon, good Alaskan salmon.
Last month, a longtime Homer fisherman was named to the United Fishermen of Alaska's Seafood Hall of Fame during the fall UFA board meeting in Homer. KBBI's Marsha Lynn has this profile.
Bob Moss is 89 years old and modest about receiving the award.
I almost looked around to see where the Bob was. No, it was a real surprise.
After spending his early years in Connecticut, Bob came to Alaska in 1947, following a stint in the South Pacific with the Coast Guard during World War II. He established a homestead across Kachemak Bay from Homer and started fishing with his brother Joel. He says they basically fell into fishing.
Came up here and we soon found out that the one thing you needed if you're doing that was a boat, because it was all along the Aleutians. We bid on all surplus boats there and never got any. So it looked like the best way was right then was in this country here was fishing. That's what everybody did. And there wasn't much choice either.
A year later, he married his wife, Carol.
I worked on the small tender that the cannery had down in Portlock, just around the corner there. And Carol worked in Portlock on salmon lines. We did that the first summer, and that got us as much broad information and experience as we could in that one summer. And then after that, we had our own operations. About then, it became pretty obvious that maybe this fishing was not such a bad deal.
Their two sons became part of the family business. At age six, Chris Moss was just a little too young to join up.
then they wouldn't take me on the boat. And I can remember waving goodbye to them as they went down the driveway, and I always felt really bad about that. By the time I was seven, then I was in the family fishing business all the time.
Bob has built a lot of boats, around a dozen, both for their fishing operation and for sale to local fishermen. He also served on the board of Fish and Game from 1962 to 1968, advocating for conservative stock management. From the mid-60s to early 70s, he was a member of the advisory panel to the U.S. delegation on the International North Pacific Fisheries Commission. He says it was an important time for U.S. fisheries when the Magnuson-Stevens Act was put in place to limit foreign fleets like those from Japan.
They were fishing in the winter grounds where the Bristol Bay red salmon spent the winter growing up, and they were always fishing in there with the gill nets there and saying they were fishing for, what was it, flying squid, because they used the same temperature there, and so they were together. You'd get there and whatever enforcement you have, and they'd say, well, yeah, but we're just fishing for the squid. One year, a meeting there in Japan when everything was settled out and it was obvious that they no longer were free fishing people in the 200-mile limit. I can remember them walking out with pretty long faces.
And he became involved with the business end of fishing, devoting time year-round to things like marketing.
In the early days, one of the holdups there really for expansion was with your markets. I think it's pretty important and really harp on the fact that it doesn't do you any good to catch the fish if you can't get rid of them there at a reasonable price.
Bob says fishermen must remain vigilant.
Things have changed an awful lot over those years, you know. But the fact, the one fact that a lot of them didn't realize, well, they didn't want to do it there, that you have to mend your P's and Q's there an off-season just as much as you do during the season.
Change is evident to his son, Chris, as well.
You know, there's a lot less fishing time anymore and more time where you're preparing to go fishing. And I think that's what Dad has always said is that you know, for most fishermen, you know, it's just the season, go out and catch the fish. But, you know, that really is only part of the business. And the other part is making sure that your business is protected in the winter, and that's attending all these meetings, which are really critical to, you know, the continuation of your fishery and the protection of it.
Bob's commercial fishing career ended with his retirement in 1988. But for both his parents, not really, says Chris, pointing to a prime king salmon mounted on the wall of Bob's home up East Hill Drive that overlooks Kachemak Bay.
You know, I say they retired, but they never really quit fishing. They just changed the kind of fishing that they did. Had a small boat built, you know, for the bay, and they spent much of their summers trolling and fishing for salmon.
For now, Bob is content to have the marine weather as a pleasant background while he sits in the kitchen looking out across the bay, reminiscing about his years on the water.
The wind was west at 27 knots.
How old is this unit?
Winds were northeast at 6 knots.
Pre-cell phone.
Synopsis. Yeah. A 965 millibars low, 30 nautical miles southwest of Cordova.
In Homer, I'm Marsha Lynn.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help this week from KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg, KBBI's Marsha Lynn in Homer, and KPLG's Mike Mason in Dillingham. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.